Okay, let's unpack this. Welcome to the deep dive, where we take the sources you've shared, articles, deep research, even field notes, and really try to carve out the most critical insights.
Today, we are wading into a genuinely fascinating conflict. It really sits at the heart of the whole modern wellness movement. You've shared a stack of sources detailing how traditional practices think purification, self-refinement.
Right, like meditation, cold plunges, that kind of thing.
Exactly. When they get extracted and applied in a modern context, they can yield some incredibly impressive, measurable
Well,
results.
they absolutely can. We have this case study of Marcus, who is, I mean, he's all about the metrics. He's seeing better heart rate variability, faster muscle recovery. He says he feels fundamentally sharper. He's all in on optimization.
But then you have this contrast with an observer, Rebecca, who is looking at a traditional 41-day purification practice, Radar.
And she is not looking for an upgrade. She is looking for a fundamental, a transformative change.
And that is the central tension we're digging into. The sources force us to ask a really crucial question. Is the active ingredient the technique itself? Is it just the cold, or the breath, or the posture?
Or is the actual mechanism for change something else entirely? Is it the context, the cosmology, the community, the sheer duration of it?
That's the question.
Our mission today is to really analyze that gap, to define what's gained, that measurable optimization, and what is fundamentally lost, the transformative context. We're diving into why a 2-minute cold plunge in a $45 studio might just not be the same thing as an ancient purification ritual.
Well, the key distinction the researchers make is between optimization and transformation. Optimization is defined as improving the efficiency of the self that already exists. It's making you faster, cleaner, more resilient.
Transformation.
Transformation is about fundamentally restructuring that self, or in some cases, dissolving it entirely to build a new system of being.
And the sources use this great term for how that happens. It's called therapeutic extraction.
Which is such a brilliant phrase, isn't it? It just perfectly captures this modern trend of taking one technique, meditation, cold exposure, fasting out of its larger system.
Ripping it out of its home.
Yes. And the sources are clear. This extraction is highly effective at preserving measurable clinical benefits. But, and this is the crucial part, it fundamentally changes the ontology, the underlying reality, the purpose of the practice.
It's like taking the engine out of a race car and, putting it in a lawnmower.
That's a great way to put it. It still runs, it still performs, but it serves a completely different and, smaller function.
So let's stick with the optimization side first, because it is so compelling. Let's go back to Marcus. He's our case study here. Medical grade ice baths in a, a sleek, climate-controlled facility.
He is the absolute epitome of the biohacking promise, and we have to give him credit. He is getting stunning results, at least according to his metrics. His HRV is trending up. His resting heart rate dropped 5 beats per minute.
Wow.
He talks about it like he's rebooting a computer, becoming dialed in.
And his verification method, this is what I find so interesting, is entirely data-driven. He tracks everything. Oura Ring, Whoop, continuous glucose monitor. He told the Source interviewer, and I'm quoting here, "Feelings are subjective, data is objective."
And that says so much, doesn't it? He trusts the algorithm over his own gut feeling.
Exactly.
But what's fascinating here is that the technique does work physiologically. Cold exposure is a powerful short-term stressor. It produces norepinephrine, which is basically a burst of adrenaline.
A microdose of stress.
A microdose of stress, yeah. And the body absolutely benefits from that. It increases resilience.
So, if it's physiologically effective, why do the sources insist this isn't transformation? I mean, if he's more resilient, isn't that a kind of transformation?
It really comes down to the purpose and what that does to the ego. The sources argue that optimization is, by its nature, self-reinforcing. Marcus thinking, I optimize my HRV. I'm a person who achieved these
He's
metrics.
taking the credit.
He's taking the credit. It strengthens his sense of self, his ego, as this competent, highly optimized machine. He's using the tool to sharpen the tool.
Right.
Whereas traditional transformation, it aims for the opposite. It wants to dissolve that achievement-oriented ego. The discipline is meant to diminish the self, to create space, not to build up the idea of me as a super performer.
That's a subtle distinction, but it sounds like it dictates the whole outcome.
The sources argue it dictates everything in the long term.
Okay, so that shift in purpose brings us right to what's lost in the extraction, the system, the cosmology. let's bring in Dr. Jennifer Hartwell, the anthropologist. This is where it gets really interesting for me.
Hartwell's point is absolutely critical. When you therapeutically extract a practice, you remove it from its larger cosmology, that whole framework of meaning that defines what the universe is, what a person is, what the goal of transformation even is.
And if you remove that meaning,
the technique just defaults to the easiest available purpose, which in our culture is usually optimization or comfort.
We see this so clearly with yoga, right?
Right?
In the Yoga Sutras, asana, the postures we do in a studio, that's only the third of eight limbs. It's just prep work.
Exactly. It's not the destination. It's the transportation. Asana exists to prepare the body to sit still for a long time. That makes way for pranayama or breath control, which then leads to meditation, and ultimately samadhi, which is union with the divine.
But when you extract it, it just becomes exercise.
Which is great. It's excellent physical fitness, but it serves a vastly reduced, purely physical purpose. The original meaning is gone.
And this isn't just metaphysical talk. It actually impacts your physical response. The sources talk about this through polyvagal theory, which is all about the nervous system.
Right. Our nervous system is always reading context cues, social cues, the environment, and critically, our intention.
So the intention actually changes the physiological result.
It does. If you practice cold exposure just to optimize performance, your nervous system reads that as sympathetic activation. It's a performance driver. Get this done efficiently.
But if you do the exact same thing, say a difficult posture to prepare for a state of receptivity,
then the cue is interpreted as preparation for parasympathetic calm. The nervous system relaxes into stillness. The physical result is profoundly different, even if the action looks the same from the outside.
That's the difference Rebecca sees in the Vrata ritual. The traditional practices are a whole web. You can't just isolate one thing.
It's a multi-system, coherent web. You can't just do the cold bath or the fasting or the meditation in isolation.
It's the total environment.
Exactly. Rebecca noted that if a participant did the cold bath, but then immediately buffered that stress by, say, drinking coffee or doom scrolling on their phone,
they'd just be layering stress on top of stress.
Precisely. The Vrata system, the diet, sleep schedule, the speech modification, it removes all those false buffers at the same time.
So you're forced to confront yourself. There's nowhere to hide.
You have to. And that forces genuine adaptation, not just temporary resilience. The whole system has to change at once to install what she calls a new operating system. And that takes 41 days of total coherence.
Which is the total opposite of the optimized, convenient, extracted approach. It sounds like convenience is transformation's biggest enemy.
Convenience lets us keep our old, sometimes dysfunctional operating system running while we just slap an optimization program on top. Transformation, on the other hand, requires the courage to remove the old software entirely.
Okay, so if optimization is about efficiency, we need to talk about what's lost in the extraction. The sources identify three key things that are necessary for real transformation.
The first, and this might be the most significant, is the loss of guidance and customization. The sources call it the guru problem. Traditional knowledge is transmitted through a relationship. A teacher customizes the practice for the student.
I found the bit on Ayurveda really compelling here. They remind us that in these systems, there is no one-size-fits-all protocol.
Not at all. For example, in Ayurveda, a Vata constitution, someone who is naturally dry, cold, anxious, they need practices that are grounding and warming. They would get totally different advice than a Kapha constitution who is heavier and needs stimulation.
So if you just say, everyone do 2 minutes at 39 degrees,
you might heal the Kapha person while actually harming the Vata person. The modern approach asks, what's good for everyone? While the traditional approach asks, good for who?
And that individual customization is just gone when we rely on apps and generalized protocols.
Completely gone. There's no one seeing you in your specific context.
Which makes sense that the next thing lost is the loss of community and co-regulation. Marcus is alone in his studio, focused on his metrics.
And this removes a really powerful mechanism for change. The sources cite polyvagal theory again, reminding us that optimal nervous system regulation often requires co-regulation. We need safe social engagement.
We're herd animals.
We are. We literally can't access certain deep states of calm and safety without the support of other regulated nervous systems around us. We think of discipline as a solo activity, but our biology says something different.
Right. So contrast Marcus's solo mission with Rebecca's grandmother doing the vrata?
Her grandmother was witnessed by the whole village. The community adjusted its behavior, provided support, accountability. It's that feeling of being carried by something larger, not just the solitary effort of an ego trying to prove something.
It turns it from a personal achievement into a communal rite of passage.
And that leads to the third critical loss, which is about accountability and verification. It brings us back to Marcus trusting his data. If your feelings aren't enough and the goal is transformation, how do you know you've actually changed?
How do you know the new operating system is actually installed correctly? This is where the sources talk about the ordeal.
The ordeal is the ultimate unfakeable test. It's binary, pass or fail. You can't game it. In Rebecca's example, the vrata is verified by a 61-kilometer barefoot pilgrimage on day 42.
You can't fake that. You can't trick your feet into doing 61 kilometers if your body hasn't fundamentally adapted.
Exactly. Now, when the sources asked Marcus what his ordeal was, he said, finishing the Ironman. But then he realized that was a goal he already had before he started all this.
He wasn't doing anything that was impossible before.
He was just becoming, in his own words, more efficient at the possible things.
Wow. That's a huge realization.
It's the key. He had optimized his code, but he hadn't rewritten the program. And that perfectly summarizes the breakthrough from Rashid, the former biohacker in the materials. He said he spent 3 years debugging the code instead of rewriting the program.
The difference is reinforcing the self versus dissolving the self. Debugging the code makes the old self work better.
But rewriting the program requires a moment of, well, intentional annihilation. Rashid's current practice reflects this. He just sits for 20 minutes. No app, no tracking, no Whoop. He is deliberately practicing not knowing if it's working.
He's removing the ego's ability to claim the achievement.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, the determining factor is always purpose. If the purpose is just self-improvement, I want to be better, faster, sharper, then the self, the ego, is reinforced.
But if the purpose is self-transcendence or serving something larger than yourself,
then the practice itself is designed to undermine that achievement-oriented ego. And that changes the outcome, even if the physical technique looks identical.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, living in a world where convenience is king? The sources suggest that for a modern practice to actually produce transformation, you have to intentionally reintegrate the things that were lost.
That means putting the practice into a multi-system approach. Diet, sleep, speech, all at once. It means sustained duration. At least 40 days, the sources suggest, to install that new operating system. And crucially, it requires guidance, community, and a purpose beyond just your personal metrics.
It's tough. We want the upgrade without sacrificing the comfortable version of ourselves. We want the gains without the required dissolution.
And while, you know, we can't all join a monastery or go on a pilgrimage to Kerala, that principle of the ordeal is really crucial for verifying real change. We need a test of whether we've truly changed or if we just got really good at tracking our numbers.
Rebecca had a great suggestion thinking about what a modern American ordeal might look like, a test rooted in our actual modern dependencies.
A genuine test has to challenge what you're actually dependent on, what you use to buffer stress and avoid yourself. So the final provocative thought for you to think about is this. What specific extended challenge rooted in the dependencies of your life, maybe it's 41 days without consuming any content, no social media, no news, no podcasts, or maybe 41 days of a total speech restriction, what would serve as a genuine, unfakeable test of whether you've truly changed? What is the ordeal that your body, not your metrics, would have to pass?